Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. Is there really such a thing as a half-Jew? I suppose so, but it seems to me that part of the survival strategy of the apex parasite is to blend races. The hosts, to weaken our defenses, but also to blend the Jew's own race in order to blur the lines of distinction between them and us, creating psychological confusion and weakness of the trigger finger. And they've been doing just that for uncounted centuries, while still retaining a genetic spiritual core that is distinctly them. It is both mental, spiritual, and usually physically visible in their faces, once one becomes attuned and sensitive to the differences, to their wavelength. Such mixing with their hosts exposes them to the danger that some of their offspring will not have the distinctive Jewish mentality to a high enough degree to enthusiastically engage in or support predation on their hosts. A few may even possess a mentality that, Aryan-like, is disgusted by such predation and the multiform deceptions that make it possible. And there have been a few Jewish defectors who were probably examples of this. Their writings are sometimes useful. Yet, the Jews don't seem to produce too many like this. Much larger in number, probably, are the ones who, finding Jewish identity and practices uncongenial, despite great monetary and practical advantages, just quietly fall away from the tribe. This, as I have pointed out before, results in a genetically transmitted, ever-intensifying Jewish mentality in those who remain. While at the same time, the loyal half, quarter, eighth, but probably still really full Jews are looking more and more like their hosts, more and more like us. Peter Sellers, the late actor and comedian from once Great Britain, is an interesting example. Sellers was half Jewish, half English. His looks fall in the range of how an Englishman might look, though perhaps a particularly small and sneaky-looking Englishman. He sounds like an Englishman, too, but there's the amazing thing. He doesn't seem to have a sound that is really his. He's always playing someone. Some of his friends even said that about him. He can sound like an Oxford Don, a Cockney laborer, a French detective, or anything else he chooses to sound like. And even, to some extent, look like. I know that that's what actors do, but in Sellers, this mimicry approaches the supernatural. In the text version of this broadcast on nationalvanguard.org, I'll embed a 1980 interview with Sellers by the Jew Gene Shalit on the NBC network, in which Time magazine is quoted as saying, quote, "There is no Peter Sellers. There is only a mass of characterizations," close quote. When Sellers does a voice, it's more than a voice. His gestures and even the contours of his face and the expression of his eyes change. He is the character he has assumed. Sellers told an interviewer once how he prepares to do a character. It almost sounds like he can read the character's thoughts and personality through analyzing his voice, face, and body language. Quote, "I start with a voice. I find out how the character sounds. It's through the way he speaks that I find out the rest about him. After the voice comes the looks of the man. I do a lot of drawings of the character I play. Then I get together with the makeup man and we sort of transfer my drawings onto my face. An involved process. After that, I establish how the character walks. Very important, the walk. And then suddenly, something strange happens. The person takes over. The man you play begins to exist." Close quote. Can non-Jews do that? Sellers performed the trick, famously, in the comedy film Dr. Strangelove, one of Dr. William Pierce's favorites, by the way, in which he plays three separate parts quite convincingly. Another feat of mimicry was his role as the low-life Cockney villain in The Wrong Arm of the Law from 1963, whose front is pretending quite convincingly to be a French fashion designer. To see and hear Sellers switch almost instantly from Parisian sophisticate to slum-dwelling London thug, sometimes with no change of camera shot or costume, is a revelation of the power of a master mimic. I'll embed a sample of that film, too. Interesting graphic in the film poster you'll see in the embedded thumbnail, by the way. Peter Sellers controlling all the characters like puppets on strings. Talk about anti-Semitic stereotypes. It's revealing, isn't it, that Jews almost always think images of puppeteers controlling people are anti-Jewish stereotypes. I have to believe it's the Jewish component in Sellers that we're seeing here. That component also captured his loyalty. Though his parents sent him to a Catholic school, he strongly identified with his Jewish side, and even once said quite passionately, if unrealistically, that total eradication of anti-Semitism was one of his main purposes in life. An extreme example of the chameleonic nature of the apex parasite was revealed to us just yesterday. In this case, a Jewess in the U.S. who actually, successfully, and evidently without makeup except maybe some dark lipstick and black hair dye, posed as a black person for decades and even made a career of her blackness. Peter Sellers has nothing on this creature, that's for sure. Here's what the UK's Guardian newspaper had to say about it. Quote, "Jessica Krug, an activist who teaches African American history, writes Medium post apologizing for false identity. A seasoned activist and professor of African American history at George Washington University has been pretending to be black for years, despite actually being a white woman from Kansas City." Well, let me break in and say, she's not white. She's Jewish. But goyish readers aren't supposed to make that kind of distinction. So we'll let it pass for the moment. Back to the article. In a case eerily reminiscent of Rachel Dolezal, Jessica A. Krug took financial support from cultural institutions such as the Schomburg Center for Research in Black Culture for a book she wrote about fugitive resistance to the transatlantic slave trade. And I'll break in again and say, that's ironic, considering how Jews basically ran that slave trade. Back to the article. But according to a Medium post allegedly written by Krug herself, her career was rooted in a toxic soil of lies. To an escalating degree over my adult life, I have eschewed my lived experience as a white Jewish child in suburban Kansas City under various assumed identities within a blackness that I had no right to claim. First, North African blackness, then U.S.-rooted blackness, then Caribbean-rooted Bronx blackness, she wrote. Let me break in to say, isn't that amazing? She could change her lies, totally, mutually contradictory lies, from year to year, and yet they were all actually believed by supposedly intelligent and educated academics, and also by actual blacks. And not just any blacks, but blacks who made their race their profession and center of their lives. It's like hypnotism, dead serious hypnotism. Back to the Guardian piece. In Krug's book, Fugitive Modernities, published before her confession, she writes in her acknowledgments, "My ancestors, unknown, unnamed, who bled life into a future they had no reason to believe could or should exist. My brother, the fastest, the smartest, the most charming of us all. Those whose names I cannot say for their own safety, whether in my barrio, in Angola, or in Brazil." Come on, let me break in. Blacks in Angola and Brazil are in fear of having their names spoken? What a hoax within a hoax. How can anyone believe this dribble? Back to the article. Krug went by the name Jessica La Bombalera in activist circles and could be seen speaking in a New York City public hearing on police brutality in June, where she said, "I'm Jessa Bombalera." Let me break in again. What a cartoonish, almost mocking name. Back to the quote. "I'm here in El Barrio, East Harlem. You probably have heard about it because you sold my effing neighborhood to developers and gentrifiers," she begins as she introduces herself. A few moments later, she adds, "I want to call out all these white New Yorkers who waited 4 hours with us to be able to speak and then did not yield their time for black and brown indigenous New Yorkers." Let me break in again. What chutzpah? Who controls New York City real estate? Krug's tribe, of course. Back to the article. Krug alludes in her Medium post to a traumatic childhood and mental health issues, but says she does not believe they can be used to excuse her behavior. "To say that I clearly have been battling some unaddressed mental health demons for my entire life, as both an adult and child, is obvious. Mental health issues likely explain why I assumed a false identity initially as a youth, and why I continued and developed it for so long. But mental health issues can never, will never, neither explain nor justify, neither condone nor excuse, that in spite of knowing and regularly critiquing any and every non-black person who appropriates from black people, my false identity was crafted entirely from the fabric of black lives," she wrote. Close quote. Unbelievable. How many others like Krug are out there, embedded in this community and that, controlling and influencing, guiding this or that community in certain preferred directions? Of course, they're embedded right out in the open, on a huge scale, in our community, the white community, the community that dares not speak its name. White people are so trusting, so kind, and so easily duped by the world's master mimics and liars and parasites that they accept the Jew as a variety of white person, perhaps a white person especially deserving of solicitude and help and respect, more than one's own family, certainly. For it's proper for one to countenance criticism of the members of one's own family. One can even disown them and disassociate themselves from them under certain circumstances. But whites, good whites anyway, condemning, disowning, and disassociating from Jews, it's simply not done. The measure of one's worth, and often net worth, is how well one serves these special, oppressed, deserving God people. For some, that's just how bad it is. The mimic and parasite is very, very, very good at what he does. But I believe that millions are not hypnotized. Millions more are ready to have the spell broken. Organized, we can change the course of history and remove the engorged ticks from our necks, their mandibles from our brain stems. Spread the word. Help us reach another million this month. Support the National Alliance.